Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
Well, I wanted to mention that it's like all winter long. Normally, we usually have a bad weather day pause. Okay, we're going to record on Monday. We're going to record on Wednesday mm-hmm. because of snowstorms. Nothing came this year, but then today a storm rolled through, and like you couldn't see too far in it. It was so thick in Bowmanville. And it's like, am I going to have to call on a snow day on Sean?
Yeah, it's funny because we had lots of big fluffy flakes out this way, but it's just basically melting by the time it hit the ground.
And I saw Mark Rubino post. His car was like in a foot deep of snow.
And up in Huntsville.
Up in Huntsville. They got nailed. So we're still in winter. Who knew? It's like the worst of it is coming in spring.
So that led us earlier to another discussion about what's happening in Alberta.
Yes.
And BC.
So yeah, I when I heard about it, I thought, okay, so to start off, they were predicted to get sometime today about 50 or so centimeters of snow. And so they're saying, well, you know, it's a big snowstorm for Alberta. You know, Alberta Kleppers come in, melt everything, big snowstorm, yada, yada, yada. But they're saying it's good because they need the groundwater for the crops. And as well, Alberta and BC needed the snowfall because they're still fighting forest fires from last season. So there's about 100. The last thing I read was there's about 60 or 70 active fires in British Columbia and about 30 or so in Alberta.
But it's not the big, massive fires.
No,
you see
they're smoldering
the
ones. And so what it is it gets into the peat moss or into the sphagnum, and it just gets in there and just smolders all winter long. And when things dry out enough, whew, it flash up again.
Up it goes again.
And so it gives you a couple really big spring forest fires. And so that's what they're watching for. They've been trying to track all these down. And so right now they are aware of about 100.
Oh, wow. West.
And so the snow and this any precipitation is beneficial to help with that, but it's like, what, they overwintered the forest fires?
We'll put this one on pause and pick this one back up in the spring.
Yes. So yeah, it surprised me when I read about that. It was on the Weather Network or something. It's like, whoa, really?
Yeah, I've never heard of that. It's wild. Yeah. You don't think about that, you know?
I know.
You think, oh, yay, it's fall
it's,
and
it's
the rains
winter.
And winter. Yeah, we're good now. And in fact, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. So that was that kind of surprised me.
But that's your science for the day.
Yes.
You've been scienced.
Yeah. And plus, they need all that. They need all the groundwater for the crops in spring, right?
Yeah.
They're already worried about in the prairies about not enough waters. Lake Ontario is down so low right now.
Oh, tell me.
Because they lower it for the winter for all the spring melt-off. And we're not getting a big spring melt. So Lake Ontario and like all the Great Lakes, they lower them for the winter so they don't flood and stuff in the spring. But now it's like, uh-oh.
Well, when we were paddling Duffins Creek there.
Yeah.
There's a good 20 or more feet from the edge of the water.
It's crazy.
Up into the marsh that's usually flooded in, right?
Yeah.
Like there's a huge amount of riverbank that is bare.
Yeah. And so I suppose the dock and stuff
they take that out.
No, but like where the dock goes, it's like that's just
oh, that'd
gravel.
Be an extra step in. Yeah, no, that's definitely down as well.
Yeah.
But it's all mud, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you try walking through that. Yeah, you can't walk through that.
So it should be interesting. I'm curious what it's going to be like for, you know, a lot of people are excited for the spring melt for doing whitewater trips and so on. And I wonder what it's going to be like this year. Like, I know that
I
up north.
Still be enough.
Up in northern Ontario, they still got a lot of precipitation, a lot of snow. But in southern Ontario, it just kept going away and we kept getting just rain. And so that was just runoff. And
yeah.
So it should be interesting to see what happens.
Because there hasn't been a lot of snow that's just stayed.
Exactly. And right. So that it's not going to melt. Like normally we'd have by now in Bowmanville, like we would have had a spring flood that, you know, like there's be all these bergy bits and big ice chunks that come down and run over the roads and block a few roads in spring, almost every spring, but not this year.
So is that a technical term?
Bergy bits?
Bergy bits?
Bergy bits, that's more of a iceberg, the break off pieces of an iceberg.
So you get bergy bits.
There's
they're full on icebergs out in Bowmanville, are there?
though they look like it. Sometimes it blocks the road. There's enough ice that it just floods the road and you get all these bergy bits all over the place.
And the penguins have to push them to the side.
Exactly, exactly.
It's the bergy bits.
I don't always control what my mouth says. Anyway.
So, first off, this is the final part of our Quiet Adventure Symposium interviews.
Yes.
The last three interviews. We are enjoying from Black Rocks Brewery, the Grand Rabbits.
Yes.
It is a...
Michigan beer.
Yeah, a Michigan beer, a hopped cream ale. It's actually pretty good.
Yes, it's actually very good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I appreciate the individuals who... brought that by the table at the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
And we are enjoying it now,
mm-hmm.
amongst others. Marquette, Michigan.
Yes.
Excellent. So this is our last one. We're not going to do too much yabbering because, you know, the interviews are...
Lots of interviews.
Yeah, we don't want this to last 7 hours. It's already going to be a
long... It's already long with the interviews.
Yeah. So our booth was set up in one row, and right behind us... if I just turned around and looked through the back of our booth, was Cliff Jacobson. Now, I always say Cliff is our, is the U.S. version of Kevin Callan.
Yes.
And Kevin Callan is a Canadian version of Cliff Jacobson. Except Cliff Jacobson's like, I don't know, I think last count he was about 174 years old.
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. he's, I don't think he's quite that old.
No.
But, no, he's been doing this forever, and, we've tried to get him on the show before, but our schedules rarely meet up.
It's hard to ever get to interview him,
mm-hmm.
but this so, time you did.
Yeah. This time he turned around and I said, sit. Sit, Ubu, sit. And, yeah, he came over and we had a little chit chat and talked about some of his early stuff and, you know, he talked about his thoughts on, and you can never get away from this, Cliff's thoughts on hanging your food barrel and yep. Does your tent footprint.
Your ground sheet.
Does it go inside or under your tent? And he went off into that. I'm thinking... I knew it.
Gosh, darn but
he,
it.
You know, we asked him about the, you know, different things about what he thinks about paddling now and stuff like that. So had a nice little chit-chat with him. It was nice to get him on. So without further ado, here is my little chit-chat with Cliff Jacobson at the Quiet Adventure Symposium. Our next guest on the show, I've been trying to get on for, I think, 3 years now. And when I look at his booth, he's signing books, and then I don't have anybody here, he can't come and talk. Then when we have somebody here, he's free. Our schedules have never matched. Finally, your booth is right behind us. Cliff Jacobson.
Wow.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, listen, thanks for the great introduction. Yeah, we're neighbors here at this show, aren't we?
Right? Usually we're way down and around somewhere, but yeah, I've been trying to get you on here for 3 years now, and our schedules are always
I know. It's, yeah, it's hard, you know, you have a lot of people coming and everything, but... hey, you said that your listeners probably wanted to know a little bit about me.
See, when we talk about you, of course, I mean, people up in Toronto, they know Kevin Callan. I say that Kevin Callan is a Canadian Cliff Jacobson.
No, or
and
no.
Cliff Jacobson is the U.S. Kevin Callan.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to tell you, I really like Kevin, and he really likes me. We're really good friends.
Right.
And if I lived in Canada, I think we'd be hanging out all the time. And he wrote his latest book, Something Rivers, it's called. What's Kevin's latest book, it's called?
It's his memoir.
Well, I can't remember, but it's Something Rivers.
Rivers? Bend in the River, Turn in the River?
I don't know. But anyway, you know, I've read all of Kevin's books, but that one is wonderful. I mean, and when I read it, I said, when he's growing up, I said, that's me. We are so much alike growing up, I can't believe it. But I just read it from cover to cover, and I just loved it because, in a sense, it's almost my story also.
Right.
It is a little different. I was in Boy Scouts. Kevin dropped out to go trout fishing.
Yeah.
I stayed in, got my eagle, but most of what I learned originally, or my love for all of this, began with scouting. You know, in those days, scouting wasn't like what it is now.
Yeah.
We did some pretty rugged stuff. We did some pretty rough canoe trips. We did weak backpacking stuff in the boonies in the backcountry with not much more than a sleeping bag and a poncho and a pot to cook in.
Right.
You know? And one of the things I learned was skills. And then as I got older, I virtually read everything in print on canoeing and camping. Everything. Right. And some of it, like the stuff from Calvin Rutstrom, I read several times because he seemed to have really the most accurate knowledge of how things go in the wilderness. And then as I did this stuff, reading these books and doing more and more canoeing and camping, I discovered that a lot of the information is wrong. Because you got to realize how authors write books. What happens is they make a proposal to their publisher, and their publisher says, yeah, that's fine, okay, this is going to be 40,000 words or 80,000 words or whatever it is. So many of them basically have enough material for, say, 40 to 60,000, so they got to fill the other 20. So they either fill it with fluff, or they parrot it and steal it. But they read other authors and they take that and they use that information.
Right.
So my books are really different. And they're different because everything in them has been totally tried and it works and it works and it works. So but I really want to qualify something because the kind of camping that I do and what Kevin does is a lot different than the way most people go camping. Most people go camping out of a car. They go to a state park or whatever. We don't do that.
No.
I mean, all my trips have been in Canadian by heart. My wife and I were married at Wilberforce Falls on the Hood River, you know, in what was then the Northwest Territories, and now none of it,
right.
Okay? Only recorded wedding there. So, you know, hey, man, I can speak Canadian.
Honorary.
Yeah, so I've done, like, I think 22 or 24 Canadian rivers.
Right.
So one of the things you learn right off the bat is, you know, if you're going to go to a place like Algonquin or the Boundary Waters or the Quetico, you can be pretty sloppy and have a good time. And yes, you can die there, but you got to kind of work at it. All right? But if you do one of these wild northern Canadian rivers, you better know what you're doing because you may not get a second chance. So my books, what I write is centered around going to those places where you may not get a second chance.
Right.
So if you don't need that information to go to Algonquin. You can have a great time with just, I don't know anything, but I'll put up a tent and a sleeping bag and have fun. But you try that on a wild Canadian river, and they're going to carry you out in a body bag and your canoe in a suitcase. So the information that I give in my books, especially my flagship book, Canoeing Wild Rivers, which is considered the international Bible, if you will, for serious paddling.
Yep.
If you use that information, you'll survive. You can use that same information going to a state park, and the only difference is you're going to be more comfortable than your friends.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's a little story that might be interesting to tell.
Please
this
do.
Was many years ago, and I had just given a performance at Canoocopia. And this guy came over to me and he says, what's your longest canoe trip, Cliff? And I said, 34 days. And he says, well, I've been out 40. So you don't know what you're talking about. So there's an attitude that some people have that the more time you spend in the wilderness, the better you get at it. Wrong.
Yes.
Okay? It's not about how much time you spend out there. It's about how thoughtful you are when you're out there. Okay? So you, I have friends, like one of my friends is Dan Cook. Some of you may have heard of Dan Cook Custom Sewing. He makes wonderful stuff. Dan has never, Dan has I think only done one Canadian river, I think, in his life. Most of his canoeing is like the Boundary Waters and other rivers in the States. But first of all, he's an excellent paddler. Right. Secondly, he's an excellent whitewater paddler. Thirdly, he's a terrific camper, very, very thoughtful. Now, Dan could go anywhere. He could go on a 30 or 40-day trip on a wild Canadian river, and he would be just fine because he thinks about things and he has the skills. So the point being is, hey, guys, skills are not more important than things. Skills are way more important than things. So if you want to do well out there, whether you're canoeing or backpacking, learn skills. Okay? Instead of buying stuff, learn skills. Once you got the skills, go ahead and buy stuff, but not vice versa.
You know what? I we were discussing last night. You saw some of my photography that I do. And I have a base. They call it the student's camera. You have to learn every little thing about this camera to take a good picture. But you get the people then that waltz out and grab that brand new top-of-the-line camera that does everything but pat you on the back for taking a good picture. The same deal with canoe gear and tripping and camping gear. You can go buy top-of-the-line, but if you don't know how to use it and use it properly, you're not going to have a good time.
That's right.
And things are going to happen.
Exactly.
You do need to learn those things. Now, I'm like you. I went through Boy Scouts and all that, the Beavers, Cub Scouts. But when it came time to go to the next level, I headed to Air Cadets. And one of the courses I took was Air Crew Survival. So they train you how to survive your plane crashes and then stick you out in the woods for about a week. And you've got to survive with a group of four as if your plane just crashed. The tips and things that I learned there, I still use to this day on canoe trips in the backcountry. You know, like when it comes to setting up a tarp or starting a fire and, you know, all that, those little things. If you know those skills, then you're going to have a much better time.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm glad you said, it's interesting you said that. One of my good buddies is a guy by the name of Dr. Bill Forgey. And he wrote a book, well, he's written a number of books, including Wilderness Medicine. He's a real, real serious outdoor guy. And he told me one day, he says, you know, Cliff, he says, the problem is once you get something in the medical literature, now the same thing applies in the canoeing and camping literature, once you get something in the medical literature, it stays there forever. You can't get it out. And here's the example he gave. He said, do you remember the back? Some of you may be old enough to remember the old back pressure arm lift method of doing artificial respiration.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
He said that was in the literature for like 30 years. He said it didn't work, but we couldn't get it out of the literature. Okay? So it's I've seen the same thing in some of the camping literature. And for example, there's a couple of things that I always get heat over when people...
I know what these are.
One of them is the bear thing, and the other is the ground clock inside the tent. So what I would like to do now is explain to people exactly why that plastic ground cloth goes inside the tent and how the literature can't take it out. Here's the deal. I'm 83 years old. So let's go back about 70 years when I was a Boy Scout. In those days, tents were made out of canvas.
Yep.
They did not have floors. Okay? So in order to pitch the tent, you had to put stakes. You had to put about six stakes in, with four corners and the sides. But since there was no floor, if you take a rectangle with no center, it'll move around, okay? So it's real hard to get the tent set up straight. Now, if you were a first-class scout and knew what you were doing, you could go bing, 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 and get it almost exactly the first time around. But then maybe you have to pull a stake and move it here to get the tent tight. And then manufacturers came up with an idea. You know what? We won't have to do that if we put a floor in the tent. So they put the floor in the tent. That set the geometry so you can just set it up and put the four stakes in. So people thought, oh, we don't need a piece of, we don't need a plastic under us anymore because this floor of the tent is waterproof. Well, you know what? It may be for a while, but then you're going to get dings in it, little tiny pinholes, and in the case where it's sewn all the way around, there's going to be leaks through the sewing. And some people will say, well, you know, the seams are all taped now. Yes, they are. But this is done on a machine, all right? And a lot of times when you hit the corners, it's difficult when you go around the corners to do that. Oftentimes, it doesn't seal properly at the corners. But no matter, eventually, you set up that tent often enough, you're straining the seams, and eventually you're going to get leaks and water's going to come in. And if you put that ground cloth underneath the tent, if it rains hard enough and long enough, water will be trapped between the plastic and the floor and come inside the tent, and you'll have a sponge pearl.
Right.
Now, there's one of the interesting stories I heard. This was a few years ago. There was literally a flood in the Boundary Waters. It flooded. And one guy sent me a picture. He woke up in the morning. He looked out the backside of his tent, and all he could see was water. The whole camp, he was total flooded. He says there was like 2 inches of water in the campsite, and he rolled one. He had a ground cloth inside the tent, and the ground cloth rolled up the side of the tent about 6 or 8 inches. As he rolled around, he said, it was like I was sleeping on a waterbed.
Right.
But I was dry. So I got lots of stories like that, and the same stories with the things with the bear, with people putting their food in a tree.
Yeah.
Tell me what, I mean, Canadians, more than anyone, should know that black bears climb trees, and that when you confront a mom and a cub, the first thing she does is send the cub up a tree.
Up a tree.
And then she may follow. All right? So what are you accomplishing by putting your food up there? I'll tell you one thing. The federal government does not care if a bear gets your food. But they care if a bear gets you.
Right.
So here's the deal. You know how you fix the problem? You separate the two. Food in a tree, people over here. Bear gets the food, we don't care. He doesn't get you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of my philosophy.
Well, you know what? And we hang our food just because that's how we were taught to begin with and became a habit. Basically, what you're saying is you can't get it out of the literature. If you do it for so many years, until someone starts saying, no, you shouldn't do that, you're still going to do it for so many years because that's the habit.
That's what...
Right? That's like if they all of a sudden said, you don't need to wear your seatbelt in the car anymore, the first thing I'm going to do is put my seatbelt on because it's a habit. But there's more and more people I know that they're just taking their barrel or their food bag, whatever, way back in the bush, strapping it to a tree, not even putting it up in the tree anymore.
Well, you know,
because it's away from camp, and honestly, if the bear wants the food that badly, they can have it.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I've been on a lot of rivers in Canada where you're not going to have trees ever even high enough.
No.
So if you do any of the northern rivers, you know, you can really forget about trees to hang food from.
Yep.
Secondly, here's the deal. If you camp in usual camps where a lot of people camp, the bears know all those camps.
Oh, definitely.
Okay? And furthermore, they know all the trees that you put your food in because there's usually only one that's high enough to do it anyway. Okay?
Yeah.
And your food's going to be gone. That's the first thing. The second thing is plastic barrels don't cut it. They'll just eat right through a plastic barrel. All right? So if you do a wild Canadian river, it's a different deal. it's a different deal because now you're dealing with wild bears. You're not dealing with these bears that have been socialized, shall we say. And wild bears are very curious, and they're going to come in your camp. And first of all, they're just not familiar with anything. If they smell your food, okay, they'll get it. Now, if otherwise, they're probably going to leave it alone, but they're curious. They're very, very smart, which is what people don't get.
Yes.
And they'll take apart a bag that has sleeping bags in it. You know, maybe they think there's food in there, or maybe they're just having fun, because they do this with cars and airplanes.
Yep.
They take them apart. I think they're just having fun. You know, so in all the trips that I've done in Canada, I've never had anything touched by a bear. And, you know, it's to me, the formula is really simple. One, keep an extremely clean camp. Number two, be sure your food doesn't have odors. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, vacuum seal it, for one thing, okay? Freeze-dried food, vacuum seal it. Now, there are people who think, you know, they think like a feather falls from a tree and a bear can smell it a mile away. No, I don't think so. Here's what really happens. If you are in a place like Algonquin or the Boundary Waters, and you even know if you're very careful with your food and the bear can't smell it at all, and a bear is 200, 300 yards away, the bear sniffs around and says, I smell people in campsite 32 or whatever. I'm going there. Because that bear has learned where there's people, there's food. Then he's going to wander around until he kind of finds something. Now, we'll get to that in just a minute. Now, in the place like the northern Canada, the bear smells humans. It's a really foreign smell. And in most cases, they're going to say, I don't like the smell, I'm staying away.
I want nothing to do with it.
In cases where the bear comes into camp, and I've had that happen several times, if you have usually more than four people and they're together, the bear will probably be maybe not confused, but assessing his odds. You just stand there, talk to him quietly, don't threaten him, don't act scared. Just say, hey, guy, go ahead, look around, whatever I've done. I know this sounds crazy, but it works. He'll just run around and go away. And I got food all over the camp. Okay?
Right.
If you are in a place like Algonquin now, where you have trained camp bears, now it's a different deal. A little bit different deal. Now, one of the things they used to say in the publications for the Boundary Waters, and I can quote it almost exactly, quote, if a bear comes into your camp, try to shoot it away. Throw rocks at him and try to hit him. Ladies and gentlemen, don't do that. We did that once on the Fond du Lac River in Saskatchewan. And that bear almost had us for dinner. Chased us into the lake. It was a bad, bad scene. Bears are extremely smart. Some of them are smarter than some people. I'm convinced of it. Okay? You do, and they have personalities just like people. Some of them are nice and some of them are mean. You catch the wrong one and you throw a rock at him and he might just eat you for breakfast.
Yeah.
So don't. The only time you want to throw something at a bear is if human life's in danger. He's mauling somebody, okay, then whatever. Or if your life is, there was a case maybe 10 years ago of a girl who was like, I think she was like 10 or 12 years old. This was in Ontario. And she was out picking blueberries not far from the house, and all of a sudden she saw a bear, so she ran into the cabin. She didn't get the door shut. The bear followed her into the cabin. She's about 12, 10 or 12. She started throwing pots and pans at the bear. The bear freaked out and got out of there and left. So, I mean, in that case, yeah, your life's in danger. You know.
Throw whatever you can. Do whatever you can.
Yeah.
But, now, you know what? When it comes to food barrels and stuff like that, my whole take on it is they're going to get it if they want it. A food barrel is, for me, easier to hold all my food and save some of the smells away so that the little critters aren't going to get into it. You know, they're not going to chew through a thick barrel like they would a pack.
Well, right? You know, I would say to people, unless you have one of the government-approved steel barrels,
yeah,
these are steel, okay, which are impossible to portage, okay, yeah, they're not waterproof, they're required for some canoe trips in certain areas, like if you canoe the Noatak River in Alaska, they give it to you. They make handy stools to sit on. That's about it.
Right. But, tables.
There's no container that I can think of. The problem with containers is if you're going to go on a long trip, you can't carry enough food in those little containers. You don't have it just isn't feasible. It doesn't work. Plastic barrels will not deter a bear. They will not. Okay, and you know what? They won't even, if you leave them there for a couple days, they won't even deter a red squirrel. A red squirrel will eat right through that barrel. Okay, so people think that by putting it in some object or tying it to a tree, first of all, bears, I think the problem people have with bears is they don't realize how smart they are. Once a bear has a little bit of experience with a rope, they're going to chew through every rope they see.
Well, they got some of these nuisance bears that have learned how to open car doors.
Yep, they can open car doors. And I've got some pictures of a rope leeding to a bird feeder. And bear, it's like Tarzan going across this rope to get to the bird feeder. All right? And here's what I tell people. The difference between humans and bears, one of the big differences is we have an opposable thumb, meaning we can move our thumb like this. Here's what you do as a person. Take your thumb and put it in line with the rest of your hand, okay? Pretend you can't use it. You can only use your fingers. Let's also pretend you can use your arms and your legs. Oh, yeah, you got a mouth that's about a foot long that opens up about a foot wide. You can use that, too. Now, pick up some container and see if you can open it. Guess what? A bear can open just about any container you can, including a can of jam. Okay? So they can open stuff that you can't believe. And they'll look at stuff and they'll figure it out. And then, you know what? They'll tell their friends. I'm serious. And the best example of this is that Bear Vault 500, that's a plastic container with a spin-on lid.
Okay.
It's been used in the Adirondacks. It's used actually all over the U.S. I'm sure they're also in Canada. It's a big company. Okay? And and the way it opens, it's like a medicine bottle. You push a tab. Well, if you don't know the story of Yellow, the bear, look it up on the internet because it's fascinating. I'll tell it briefly, but then I got to run. This was maybe 15 years ago. There was a female black bear in the Adirondacks that was able to get into this thing. She figured it out. It took her a couple weeks. She figured it out. Then she told all her friends. Pretty soon, every bear in the Adirondacks could open it up. So they told the manufacturer, you need to improve this thing. So what the manufacturer did, he added a second tab. This is like opening a little pill Come container, on. Okay? Guess what? Yellow figured that one out in a day and told all of her friends. So now you can't use it in the Adirondacks. And here's what's interesting. When I go to these shows and I do my bear show, what I do is I put an autographed copy of one of my books in this container. And I cover the directions to how to open it, because bears can't read you, okay? And then I pass it around in the audience, and the first one who gets it open gets the book. So here's what I've learned. If it's an all-adult audience, it takes goes through about a dozen people before they figure it out. If it's teenagers, watch out. It's like number two.
Really?
Yeah, so, you know, some of this stuff that they do playing these video games probably pays off. But if you think about it, the typical adult either can't figure out how to open it or takes them some time. A bear can. So this gives you a lot of respect for these animals.
Yeah. You have to respect them when you're out there. Yeah. So how long have you actually been canoe tripping now?
Oh, I started canoe tripping when I was about 12 years old at a rustic scout camp in Michigan, back in the days of wood canvas canoes. And then I went to aluminum canoes, and then fiberglass, and then Royalex, and carbon Kevlar, and whatever the latest and greatest is.
Latest, greatest, and lightest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
do you have particular places? Now, I know, like you say, you've done a lot of Canadian rivers.
Yeah.
Favorite places that you like to paddle?
You mean in the U.S. or Canada?
Both.
Well, of course, my favorite in Canada has to be the Hood River. I've done it twice. I was married on it. It's, to me, it's one of the most spectacular, well-balanced rivers of all. I remember writing Bill Mason and talking about this. And Bill, in his book and so forth, he wrote about how much he loved the Nahanni. Then he went and he did the Hood, and it was almost like, if you read between the lines, it was almost, well, yeah, I like the Nahanni, but you can rip that page out of the book. Now it's the Hood. So I think, yeah, the Hood's my favorite. I've done a lot of wonderful, wonderful rivers in Canada. I really love the North Knife in Manitoba because it's all river, no lakes. You get to see polar bears and whales. And it's, you can do the river without, you can do the North Knife without a spray cover, which is a plus. It's got to be a good, really good paddler, but it's, you can do it without a spray cover. So that's really another one of my favorites. I dearly love Saskatchewan rivers. It's just, most people, they think, you know, Saskatchewan's like Wheaton, whatever.
That's the southern half where I used to live.
But you know what? It's wonderful canoe country because there's very few bugs. It doesn't rain much. You've got these beautiful sand eskers, some of which like go for miles.
Yes.
It's got great rapids, and the water's not so cold that if you capsize, you die. So I really like that. Ontario, my favorite river is the Kapka.
Yeah.
The Kapka is very unusual because it's only a couple of hours from Thunder Bay, but it's, you almost think there's a set of falls in there, which my wife Susie named Wedding Cake Falls, which sort of reminds you of being in maybe Alberta.
Right.
Now, in the U.S., you know, when I got to the point where I can't do these rugged portages anymore, I started doing U.S. rivers, and I've done a lot of them. Started doing Western rivers, but my all-time favorite U.S. river is the Rio Grande. By far. And I would say to Canadian paddlers, don't snub your nose at this river. It's right on the Mexican border. If you crash and burn, it's a long ways out. Okay?
Right.
And you're not going to do it on foot very easily because everything in that desert either bites, cuts, or stings. Okay? You're going to see some of the most spectacular scenery you've ever seen. You're going to paddle through canyons at over 1,000 feet high. You need to be a good paddler. The upper part is class. A lot of it goes from reasonably calm to mid class, sometimes high class too. The lower end, the canyon section, will run 2 to 3. Depending on water levels, even some 3+.
Right.
There are portages, but it's a wonderful, wonderful trip. The camping is incredible. There are no bugs. I'm going to repeat that, folks. There are no bugs.
I don't know what a trip
and
like that would
do
be.
This, and you can do this river in January or February when you can't be canoeing in Ontario.
Right.
So, you know, those are really... That's actually, I rate the Rio Grande up with some of my favorite Canadian rivers.
Cool.
You'll rub shoulders with Mexican ranchers. You'll talk to them. It's really delightful. And, you know, before I leave, if you're interested in the Rio Grande, go on my blog site, or my website. Go on my blog, and there's... there's a blog about the Rio Grande. One of them is called Been There, Done That.
Okay.
And you'll find it extremely interesting. Right now there are two blogs on there about canoeing the Rio Grande. And so this will give you a pretty good idea of what this river is like. So, yeah, I'm still canoeing. I'm still camping. I just can't do the tough portages anymore. But, hey, guys, I'm 83, and you can do this well into old age.
Oh, yeah. You're coming to the show. You're going to Canoecopia. You do other stuff. Before you leave here, what do you think is the state of canoe tripping now? Is it getting better? Are there...
I don't know. It's interesting to hear the word canoe because all you usually hear is kayak. I'm kayaking. Yeah. Kayaks are wonderful. There's a reason why the Eskimos invented kayaks for open water. Or the hot ones for running rapids. If that's what you want to do, that's your sport. But, hey, Canadians, this is canoe country. The Indians invented a canoe for a reason. Mm-hmm. If you want to canoe your great rivers, you got to carry a bunch of gear because these trips are long. And you're not going to do it in a kayak because, A, you don't have the room. B, it's a mess for trying to portage these things. The boat's not designed for it. So people say, I'm a kayaker. I'm not a canoe. A boat's a boat, okay? You get into whitewater, exactly the same. Canoeists have to do the same thing that kayakers do, except we do it with one paddle and they do it with two.
Right.
But you know what? The Eskimos did have two. They had double and single paddles. And they used single paddles for silent running and running between the ice floes and so forth. But so what's the state of canoeing today? One of the things, the state of canoeing northern rivers is probably you're going to have to get into folding canoes because the airfare... The airplanes are incredibly expensive. Putting canoes on the floats, a lot of them don't want to pay the insurance and get the permit to carry, outboard canoes. So, unfortunately, you're going to have to buy a folding canoe if you want to do those rivers. But if you love canoeing and camping, get beyond Algonquin. Get beyond the boundary waters. And you will discover a world of incredible beauty. You will walk with caribou. You will see caribou swimming right next to you along the canoe. You can pat the backs of some of them with your paddle. You will see muskox around you, grizzly bears, polar bears. I remember seal going by my canoe on the Seal River, patting the seal on the back with my paddle as it went by. People say to me, Cliff, why would you do those northern rivers? And I say, the difference between going to a place like the Boundary Waters and Northern Rivers, the Boundary Waters is a canoe trip. Mm-hmm. And I love the Boundary Waters and I love canoeing. But Northern Canada is an experience unto itself.
Right.
It's more than a canoe trip. You rub shoulders with native peoples. Some of these Inuit people you'll meet, they don't even speak English. Okay, it's wonderful. The experience of the people and the magic of the wildlife. Go while you still can before everything is dammed and built up and whatever.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, with that, I got to go.
Cliff, thank you very much for taking the time. It's been 3 years. We're back here again next year. Maybe we'll get you on again.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Cliff. Thanks. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Always nice to catch up with Cliff.
It is.
Even when he goes on his little rants.
Yes.
There's a few things that he feels strongly about, and he has no problems letting you know.
I can remember a few times after the Quiet Adventure Symposium, sitting in a hotel room somewhere, and he goes off on his tangent. It's like, oh, is he going to stop?
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to throw something out there just to get him going.
Yes.
It's fun.
Yeah, and some people, it's like, don't do that.
Yeah. Really great guy. Don't get him started. So much knowledge in that noggin of his, too. So
he's had so much experience in his lifetime with backcountry paddling and you name it, he's done it. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So like I say, it was great to sit down and chit-chat with him, and definitely won't be the last time. So from there, somebody else we haven't had on in a while.
We haven't.
Camper Christina.
Yes.
She was actually straight across from Cliff.
Yes.
So while she was had a break for a moment, we waved her over and she came over to chat about what she's been up to and how things are going with her and trips and stuff like that that are coming up. And yeah, so we had a little talk with her about that sort of stuff. And this is how it went.
All right. Next up on the agenda, somebody we haven't talked to in a couple of years. Camper Christina. How you doing, Christina?
I'm good. How are you doing, Sean?
Not too shabby. Feeling a bit awkward without Derek here today, but it's working out well.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you.
Let's talk about us.
What's been going on?
Well,
last couple of years, you've been doing a lot of tripping.
Yes.
A lot of tripping.
I've been doing a lot of tripping.
Like you're out like every weekend, it seems.
It seems that way, but probably about 2 weekends a month year-round, so...
That's not bad.
Yeah.
It's more than a lot of people get.
I've been doing a little less tripping than normal, actually, because I've been spending more time doing videos and taking a little time for myself, looking to sell my house and find something a little bit more remote.
Really? Yeah. I hear Tuktoyaktuk's nice this time of year.
Tuktoyaktuk, what?
Tuktoyaktuk.
I don't know about that, but I'll take a look.
It's way up there. Way up there. Okay. Arctic Circle up there.
All right.
Yeah. You got any plans for this year yet? No.
Well, I'm kind of running out of routes into Mogami, which is, as most people know, my favorite place to go. I have a list of, like, maybe 4 or 5 routes, and I did most of them last year. So I didn't actually think I'd get another season out of it, so I was happy about that. But I've got a couple of places I'm looking into going this year. It's something new.
Right.
But we'll see what happens.
Farther north?
Farther north, yeah.
Broaden your horizons,
yeah,
as they say.
I mean, I love Tomogamy, but I've been tripping there for about 6 years now-ish.
Yeah.
And I've done most of the routes that I wanted to do and that I can do in 5 to 7 days. So I have to find something.
I mean, that's me with the Algonquin Park. I've done Algonquin so many times. It's do I want to go back? Okay. And it depends if I'm taking somebody or not for the deal. But otherwise, yeah. Gotta head elsewhere nowadays, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, if you've done everything you wanted in Tomogamy, time to find a new destination of choice.
Yeah. So if anybody has any suggestions, get in touch with me, camperchristine@outlook.com. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe suggest some routes.
Right.
You know, I've been giving lots of people lots of routes over the years, so maybe I can get a little bit of payback this time.
Right? Give them as good as you get.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. So you're still running your online courses?
Yes. I have Backcountry Camping for Beginners and Winter Camping for Beginners online. You can find them on my website. And they're doing very well. I just gave a bunch of them out at my presentation today.
Cool. And if people want to look into those, where do they find them?
On my website at camperchristina.com. I have my courses on there. I have all my platforms on there, so everybody can find them.
Are you getting a lot of people taking them and getting to the outdoors?
I think so. Yeah. I'm getting a lot of good feedback. And I think it's great. I was talking to a woman at the Outdoor Adventure Show last weekend, and her son has autism, and he loves to go out in nature.
Right.
But she doesn't really know what to do. She's done car camping. She wants to go backcountry, but she didn't really know what to do. So I gave her a free course and told her to get in touch, and she sent me an email out last week. And now they're going to watch the course together on their television because you can Comcast it through, like, Roku and stuff like that.
Right.
And hopefully that'll help her to get him out a little bit more.
That would be cool.
That kind of stuff touches my heart. That's why I do this stuff. I don't care about the money. You know, it's nice. Helps me to pay for my trips. But, I mean, when someone comes up and gives you a story like that and you shed some tears, it's just like, there's no better feeling. I mean, I'm not happy she's crying. But, you know, she was just so grateful because she was so lost. And she didn't know what to do and how to you know, solve this problem. So
now she's great
to be able
outlet.
To do that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. We actually just had a couple of younger girls up here looking to outdoors and stuff and passed them your way, so hopefully they'll give you a look as well. And that's one of the things you've talked about before is the younger
girls and women and stuff that are interested in it and hopefully coming your way and getting more out there, right?
Yeah, well, we are at the Quiet Adventure Symposium, but last weekend we did Toronto. And at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show on my Saturday presentation, I had 6 children in my audience, which is the most I've ever seen.
Right.
And 4 of them were girls.
Good.
So that kind of stuff touches my heart. I mean, if we don't teach the younger generation, you know, what the outdoors is about and get them to love the outdoors like we do, there's not going to be anybody there to protect them. And these places are going to start disappearing. And they already are disappearing, but, you know, even more so if these people don't love these places. If they're all out playing video games and watching TV, and they're not out there camping and paddling and, you know, loving these places, then who's going to protect them?
As they say, use it or lose it.
Exactly.
And if it's not being used, then that just gives people an excuse to go in and take it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And make other things with it. Yeah, and we've been talking about with other people today. You know, like moving to Toronto area when I did, like people's idea of going north was going to Barrie for, you know, an hour north of Toronto sort of thing. You're like, well, that's not north.
Yeah.
And we got to get that mentality. You know, get out of the city. Like, your car goes more than 100 kilometers.
Yep.
Right? Unless, of course, you got one of those electric cars.
I was just going to say that.
Make sure it's fully charged first. Before you go, make sure it's fully charged.
Exactly.
But yeah, get out of the city and get into nature and start your paddling. And you don't have to have travel. I had a $700 canoe when I started, and it was heavy fiberglass. Like, it was the cheapest thing we could find.
Yeah.
And I used that for years, and I learned so many skills in that thing.
Yep.
You don't need to start with top-of-the-line
I used to backcountry trip with my Perception Tribute kayak. I don't have it any longer. I finally sold it last year to a friend of mine. But just a little kayak, you know.
Yeah.
And I would put it on my shoulder and carry it through all the portages and struggle with it, but that was what I had at the time, and that was what I could afford, and it did the job, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of great access lakes, especially if you're going, like you said, north, drive a little further and go to some access lakes that, you know, like Gamble Lake and Tomogamy, where maybe takes a little longer to get there, but when you get to that access, you can paddle down to Lady Evelyn. You can paddle all through Gamble. There's a whole bunch of waterways. You don't even have to do portages, right? So if you have those heavier canoes or an inflatable kayak or a raft. I mean, when I was younger, before I started getting into canoe tripping, I used to go to the Niagara River with a rubber dinghy that I got from Canadian Tire.
Right.
I'd blow it up, and I'd sit in there, and I'd paddle around, and, you know, whatever gets you out there, right?
That's well, and I mean, now a lot of people are getting into this stand-up paddleboard camping. And they put all their gear on the front and the back, sort of, and off they go, right?
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Yeah. So I was mentioning in my presentation today, what do people portage? I did a presentation on portaging in the Canadian wilderness. And I was at McRae Lake a couple of years ago doing a trip. And there were 2 groups there. And they were on an inflatable pink flamingo and an inflatable white swan.
Right.
And they had all their backcountry gear on there and coolers and everything. And, you know, it might not be the safest. It's August, you know, if your stuff dumps, well, oh, well, you might be going swimming. But, you know, hey, they're out there. They're trying to get out there. And they're not trying. They're actually doing it. And that's work for them. So, hey, they probably had a great time. And I thought it was awesome, right?
Yeah. You know what? And that's the whole point, is just get out there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So other than that, what's new with you?
What's new with me? Well, I got a new tent. I got a new tent and a new stove for winter. I know we're starting to head into paddling season, and this is a paddling show, but we also talk about all kinds of camping.
We do.
So I have made, if you don't follow me, I made 3 homemade hot tents now out of painter's drop cloth that you buy at the hardware store. And I have videos on my YouTube channel of how I made those. But my solo, I made in 2017. And my first homemade tent was the teepee. It was 2015. The second one was the solo in 2017. And it's starting to get pretty worn, and winter isn't winter anymore.
No.
And so you're starting to go on winter trips, and we're getting more rain, we're getting a lot of wet weather, and my canvas tent is water resistant. I've got it treated, but it's not waterproof. And if it's going to rain for 5 hours or whatever, which it's done, I'm going to get wet. My gear is going to get wet. So I wasn't feeling very protected anymore. My tent was starting to, you know, it's old. It's cost me $150 to make it. I've camped in it for 6 years. It's done its job, right?
Yeah.
So I reached out to a company called Light Outdoors. They make nylon winter tents. And I got one of their tents called the Isola 4. It weighs 4 pounds. I took it backpacking on Boxing Day because we didn't have any snow.
Right.
Usually I do like a couple of trips over Christmas and New Year's because I have time off work. And I couldn't take the sled. I couldn't take any of my hot tents with my Nyko stove because there was no snow.
Right.
So I've got this new titanium stove from a place called Fire Hiking. It also weighs 4 pounds. And it collapses and it folds up into like a little tiny bag. So me and my 4 pound nylon tent in my backpack and my little stove in my hand, and off I went backpacking and doing a backpacking hot tent trip. Retake that. Which I never thought I could do, right? With a hot tent. I mean, you never think you could take that in your backpack.
No, and so, I mean, the number of people this year that, you know, oh, are you want, no, I'm canceling because there's no snow to, you know, haul all my gear in.
Yeah. So you know? Four of the first winter trips that I did this year, three of them it rained.
Yeah.
And so I was so grateful to be sitting in that tent, have the warmth of a fire and the stove, and know that I'm not going to get soaking wet because I'm in a nylon tent. And again, like the canvas tents are great. If you're getting a snow trekker, an Esker, all of those, they use, I believe, 10.2 ounce canvas.
Right.
My canvas is 8 ounces. It's drop cloth, right?
Yeah.
It's treated, it's waterproof, it's fireproof. But again, it's made for winter. It's made for snow. It's not made for wet, rainy weather. So these other tents, the snow trekkers and Eskers and that, they're fine in the rain, I think, for the most part. I know a lot of people would use them. But mine wasn't cutting it anymore. So it was time for me to invest in something else. And I'm really happy with the tent so far. It does have some condensation, which is something I was worried about. So I got a liner from the company. They make a condensation liner that goes inside the tent. And I have it. But then the spring show season started. So just as we started getting a bit of winter weather, you know, we were camping at Mew together a couple weeks ago. We got a big dumping of snow. I think it was like a foot of snow in one day.
10 inches, yeah.
Yeah. And then it was minus 35 when we packed up. And then 3 days later, I was putting my canoe on the car to go to the outdoor adventure show.
Yeah.
And it was 9 degrees.
I can't even talk about the weather anymore. It's just been so...
I know.
You know, I mean... Thursday, I was out paddling.
Yeah. But you know what, Sean? This is what we do.
Yeah.
This is what backcountry camping is. You have to take what you're given, whatever that is, shitty weather, bad storms, lightning, snow, wind, and you have to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all part of being a backcountry camper and a good backcountry camper, I think. And, you know, we've seen this coming for a while. I mean, how many years has David Suzuki been saying, you know, climate change is coming, you guys got to pay attention, you know, and nobody's doing anything, and now the weather is crazy, and people are like, why? What's going on? It's weird. And these experts have been warning us for years, so we've just got to adapt.
If it lets me get out longer,
yeah,
then I'm good with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, let's go paddling longer.
Right?
That's great. It's still not great for the world. The environment is horrible. But, you know, that's part of being a good backcountry camper, I think, is predicting what's going to happen, changing your trip plans when you need to, adapting your gear and what you're doing to whatever Mother Nature and the world is going to throw at you. Because you just have to roll with it. Otherwise, you're going to be staying home every weekend.
And that's exactly it. I mean, the number of people I know that cancel canoe trips.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks like there's going to be raining all weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And?
Yep.
What's your point?
Yeah, get, put up get a tarp. Good tarp. Right.
Put a tarp up. Get your fire going.
Yeah.
Enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're going to sit in front of a TV, or you're going to sit in front of a nice roaring fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got your choice. Priorities, right?
Yeah, in the fall I did a trip to Algonquin. You know, Algonquin's really busy in the summertime. It's hard to get in. But in the fall, it's empty, right? So I had a weekend, a weather weekend. It was ridiculous, and I loved it. I went out, it was 15 degrees and pouring rain the first day. Okay, so no problem. It's warm enough, right? Even if you're wet, you've got time. Get to camp, set up your tarp, get the fire going. All my gear dried out.
Yep.
Then the next day, it was 5 degrees, right? And then the day after that, it snowed. On my way out, it was snowing, and it was minus 5. But again, you just have to have the right gear, know how to handle it.
Keep an eye on the weather.
Keep an eye on the weather, right? And that's a lot of things that I like to teach in my course, because you really have to just adapt.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it's like you said, you're going to be sitting at home. Well, what am I going to do, right? So you got the proper gear. Again, it doesn't have to be expensive.
No.
But, you know, work with the weather. Reschedule your trip. Go somewhere else.
You know what? And with me is, if I can find some open water to go paddling, I'd be good with that.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter where the time of year is. If I can get some open water. And, I mean, you can cold camp.
Yeah.
Now they're saying you have to have a hot tent or something out there.
Exactly.
So if you can find a stretch of river or something that's going to take you to a camp spot.
Yeah.
Throw your cold, just take your gear. Take the proper gear with you.
Take the proper gear. Learn what to do. Learn how to use it.
Yeah.
And let's go. I mean, we can't change the weather. We can't. Right? I mean...
Not for lack of my trying.
Yeah, exactly. So you've just got to find the best way to work with what you're given and go have fun.
Yeah. So you're going to Canucopia next week?
Yes, I am.
That's awesome. I'm not going this year.
My first time.
Have you never... Oh, no, because the first time you're going to go got canceled.
My very first time going to Canucopia was supposed to be in 2020.
All right.
I purchased a plane ticket. I booked a hotel. And literally 2 days before Canucopia, they started shutting everything down. And so Delta Airlines, for some reason, even though I didn't have insurance, like some people did, they gave me a credit. And I was just like, yeah, whatever, I'm never going to use this. So last year, they said, you have got until December 31st, 2023 to book something. You can book it for 2024, whatever, but it has to be booked in 2023. So I booked my tickets. I contacted Darren Bush from Canucopia, and I said, I really want to come. You know, what are the dates? Blah, blah, blah. I booked everything in advance. And I'm off on Wednesday. I work. And then I'm heading to Toronto Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I am flying to Wisconsin.
You'll have a great time.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited. Darren has been very welcoming. I just did a radio interview with him on Wisconsin Public Radio a couple days ago, and it was fantastic. I'm really excited to check out Canucopia.
See, I've been there twice, and you know, like, it's the speakers that really make that show.
Yeah, I know, like over 100 of them.
Yeah, I know Kevin Callum was there last year and spoke, I think, 9 times.
Yeah. I heard that.
That's just crazy.
I don't even, right? I can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. So I'm speaking on the Saturday in the main room in between Kevin Callan and Kevin Callan. Yeah, he's on before me and after me. And I said to them, you know, like, I've got another presentation. I did 2 at the Outdoor Adventure Show. And I said, if you need, you know, if anything happens. So I got an email just before I left to come here from Chloe saying someone has canceled, someone's wife or something had to go in for emergency surgery, and they have an open time slot on Friday night at 6:30 p.m. in the Bear Room. So they want me to do my presentation then as well.
Awesome.
And I offered to do the second one, but since they've already advertised the Portaging one, they thought it'd be good for people to have 2 different options to come see it. So, yeah, I'm presenting then, and I believe I'm at 1:30 on the main stage as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You're going to have a good time.
Yeah. Yes. But it's going to be portaging in the Canadian wilderness instead of portaging.
Yeah. You got to use that word down there.
Yeah. And I have all my slides converted into miles and rods and yards and all the things so that, you know.
We just give them both.
Yeah.
We've learned.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if you have any roots or anything planned, and if anybody has any roots to give to you.
Yes.
You want them emailed where?
CamperChristina@outlook.com. Uh-huh. Or you can reach me at, you know, Facebook, my Facebook page, or Instagram. I'm out there. I'm all over the place on social media. But, yeah, I'm looking for some nice 5-day, 6-day routes, loops, something with some challenging portages, you know.
All the good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Nice to talk to you. Let us know what's going to go on if you do make some trips.
I will. Absolutely.
All right. Take it easy.
Thanks for having me on.
And enjoy next week at Canucopia.
I will. We're really sad that you're not going to be there. It's not going to be the same without you, but
right?
We'll muddle through.
All right. It's just devastation.
It was nice to catch up with Camper Christina. Like I say, we haven't had her on for a little while.
Yeah, it's been a bit, eh?
Yeah. And she's making the rounds this year of all the
shows. Did she go to Canucopia?
She did go to Canucopia. Yeah. She had to present there and whatnot. So
I saw some reports on Canucopia. They said that the pre-COVID crowd is back. They had huge numbers. They said everything looked like because they compared it to it was like a statistic. Okay, what was your paddle sales statistic? Is like was it pre-COVID or so? Apparently,
COVID is a. Mm-hmm. Statistic now, like a dividing line.
Yeah. So they said that things are back and it was as packed as they've ever seen it pre-COVID.
Good.
So, I think we already decided that we're most likely going to go next year to Canucopia.
Yeah.
So, but
I figure every 2 years.
Yeah.
At least every two years get down there.
Yeah. But anyways, back to Camper Christina. So she was down there. She's been to a lot of the shows. I saw that she was interviewed by, I think, CTV News.
Is it CTV or CBC, one of the two?
I can't remember what it was. But she was interviewed for TV.
Yeah. She was on the news up here for the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show.
Yeah.
And then she was on Wisconsin radio station with Darren Bush of the Grand Poobah, as we were saying last time, Canucopia.
Yeah.
She's definitely out there still. If you go to camperchristina.com, you can check out her courses on winter camping and backcountry camping. She talks about gear.
Does she still have the cooking courses too, or is it just videos?
She does have food stuff on there too. Yeah. So there's a lot of videos, a lot of information that you can get, especially if you're just getting into it. So check it out. And like I say, it was really nice to sit down and chit-chat with her. Usually what we like to do is finish off our Quiet Adventure Symposium episodes.
Always when people are packing up.
Yeah, when we're packing. Everybody starts. It goes till 5 o'clock and come 4:30.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody's trying to make a beeline to their cars so that they're not facing the traffic trying to get out of the parking lot. They
close the roads after 6.
Yeah, but people start tearing down and all around us, but we're always the last ones there.
Yeah.
And we get Jerry Vandiver and we have Caitlin Evanson and we're chit-chatting with them as people are tearing down. And we said in the interview, it's like being at the bar. We're the last ones left. We're closing this place down.
But you know, with them, they're so busy during these shows that it's only when things are closing up that we have time to get them on for an interview.
Yeah. And I enjoy closing everything out with the two of them and do a nice little chit chat with them beforehand. Yes. And they close the show with a nice song This year was no different. So this is my interview with Jerry and Caitlin and a really nice song that is off their latest album. So.
Latest album, it's The River Just Flows. It's on their latest album, Peaceful Waters.
And yes, you can get that at jerryvandiver.do. I'll check that one.
Is it on the album?
Is it Jerry's? Oh, it's not Jerry Vandiver Music or something like that. Let me get back to that one. In the meantime, listen to this.
When we return,
we'll tell you where you can get his music. I mean, you can get it everywhere. Just Google his name.
Yeah, exactly.
But here's the interview. It is almost time to pack up from a great day at the Quiet Adventure Symposium. Talked to a lot of people, met a lot of people, and we like to finish every
episode from The Quiet Water, be it being one episode, two episodes, seven episodes of interviews. With the last episode we like to do is with Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson. Yay. How you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Happy to be here.
We're thinking about changing our name, though, to the Alter Eagles.
Eagles.
I'm the Bald Eagle, and she's the Golden Eagle.
Welcome.
You've got more hair than I do, Jerry.
Still bald, right? Nevertheless.
Grass don't grow in a busy street. And it don't grow in concrete either. So what's been up with you guys?
Oh, gosh. Well, we were in Toronto last weekend.
You were?
We ran into you for a 5 minutes, which was not long enough.
But is that 5 minutes?
Yeah, that was about it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was closer to four.
Well, so we played Friday at the Toronto Outdoors Show.
Yeah.
And then we played Saturday at the Wilderness and Canoe Symposium.
Right.
And thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. And now we're here, and we're moving forward to Canoecopia next weekend. And then we have a couple other things in Nashville.
Right.
As songwriters, we're moving out of, when we get back to Nashville, we move out of the paddling songs into
real songs.
Those other people's songs. You know, the people that don't know how cool this is.
The people that pay the bills, is that what you're
well,
saying?
Well, that's true. That's true. That's a good way of putting it. Very much
Jerry
so.
Jerry likes to nibble the hand that feeds him.
Oh, that's
but
okay.
She's a little love bite.
I'll segue into this so she can tell you more what she's doing, but you might remember, and I think we may have discussed this at another place and time today, but a year ago tonight, we were standing around a television set watching her on Saturday Night Live.
We were?
And so let's go there. Why were you on Saturday Night Live, Caitlin Evanson?
Well, I recently received a call that said, hey, do you want to go for a little try touring with Kelsey Ballerini? A fantastic pop and country artist who I was just getting to know at the time. My very first gig with her was Saturday Night Live. She performed on Saturday Night Live, and the host was Travis Kelce at the time. Uh-huh. So they duoed. I know, right? Not a bad turnout for that one. And, yeah, that was a year ago this week.
Yep. Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
When you're having fun. Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, I've been touring for her, and I absolutely adore her. She's an upstanding, strong woman and is, in my opinion, the change that country music needs for women.
Yeah.
In it, she's very strong, and she's supportive of her girls. There's dogs all over this place, guys. So
oh,
I'm just like, score!
Feather.
Feather is the cutest, but... Anyway, she really takes care of her girls, and she's recently inspired me. She put her EP out, and I finally, after 20 years of playing for other people, put my own EP out. I finished it, and it's being mixed right now, and it's a little raw. It's a little heavy. It's on the side of it really raises awareness of sexual harassment and violence in the music industry. Which is not touched on very often, and she has been a big support, and all my girls have been a support, and yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. And I've just been sitting at home paddling.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
Right? So actually my daughter just showed up here. We sent her over to see the rabbits.
How was it?
Oh my gosh. I wish I
She's going to trade the cats in and get a rabbit now.
Well, 4 years ago, I got a rabbit from the rabbit convention and took it home from here.
Yeah. How's he doing?
He is the king of the castle. He has a big, beautiful house, complete with battery-operated lampposts and hay. He is a big, fluffy, white royalty of the house.
Yeah. If you had a dog, you'd dress it up, wouldn't you?
I hate to say it, but I probably would, yeah.
Wow.
I might knit it a sweater.
Yes.
But isn't that where sweaters come from?
Rabbit? The Angora rabbits that grow really long hair, they do cut it and make sweaters, and it just keeps growing, like Rapunzel.
See? It's like our dog just keeps growing and growing. We got dog hair all over the house now.
I got a lot of dog hair on my sweaters. Yeah.
How are things with you?
Wonderful. I just having so much fun playing not only these songs, but like the other people's songs that we play, like at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville.
Right.
We're setting up a couple of gigs for that, and we're actually going to go to Alabama and play a listening room concert in Huntsville in a couple of weeks. So we're keeping busy, you know.
Cool.
The Alter Eagles are keeping busy.
Yeah,
Alter Eagles. So, I know I was one CD behind, and I
now
have it in my hot little hands. It seems to be lacking something, though.
Is there no CD in it?
No, there's no autographs on it.
Oh, we have to autograph it. Oh, well, how much is that going to cost us?
Yeah, wow. Even I got that one, Jay.
I will let you autograph this for $20 a piece.
Okay.
All right?
Amazing.
Sound like a deal?
Maybe we can negotiate $25 a piece.
That's a good price or half the price.
Stop at $23.
So, like I say, you guys seem to be doing good. You seem to be doing well. You're doing your touring stuff. You're doing your single-only stuff and whatnot.
Yes.
As a separate thing, your wife is doing these cards.
Yes.
And she's going to be doing some with canoe themes?
She is. We're already talking design right now.
They're beautiful.
With, paddles and evergreen pine trees and canoes and kayaks and maybe even some SUPs. And different card styles, so I think we're going to have them available this time next year.
Awesome.
Yeah. She's
They're beautiful.
Got that
beautiful.
In the works, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So in order to close out this fabulous show this year, you guys are going to, do you know what you're going to play? And don't say a song.
See, I wish I had gone there. But
right? Yeah. I'm a smartass. I know smartasses.
Let's do River.
Okay, yeah.
Do River.
Okay.
I mean, it's...
This is just one of our all-time favorite songs.
Yeah. Just the river was telling us what to do.
Do we have time to talk about how it was written?
You have as much time as you need.
What? Okay. So I think all of you guys can relate. Anyone who's ever picked up a paddle can relate to this feeling. But just shoving your way out the door, it just feels like you're swimming through wet concrete to get out the door and get on the water. Life just tries to get in the way. And you get out there and you start paddling and you're huffing and puffing and you're pissed off about something. And eventually, you hit this calm of, and you zen out and you go, that's why I came out here. Always, it comes back to you if you really, your ears are open, you know. And so, we were having one of those zen days, Jerry and I, just paddling around, and we, up the Narrows of the Harpeth, right?
The river near Nashville.
Yeah. Right. And we found a little spot to stop and picnic, and... I was just feeling super zen, man. Just like one with the trees. And I was thinking about how there's a lot of anxiety, especially these days, in all of our lives, anyone's life. What decisions, and then shoulda, coulda, wouldas in life, and then what should I do? And I just watched the river, and I said, man, the river just flows. You know, it always knows what it's supposed to do. Wouldn't it be nice if we could do that too? And Jerry looked at me and said, well, there's a song. And wrote it.
In that exact accent, too.
Right? I don't know why you're Waylon Jennings all of a sudden.
Boy, had to tell you what, that there's a song, boy.
That's pretty good for a Canadian.
That's really good. That's pretty good for a Canadian. Wow, Jerry. Wow.
So you know when there's an invasion, they're talking about this invasion that's going to happen from Canada?
Oh, please do. Please, I'm serious.
We're just coming for your booze.
We could use you. We really could.
We could. Yeah.
Want a trade?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right. What are we doing? Oh, yeah.
So this is this is the river.
Yes.
It's called The River Just Flows.
The River Just Flows. This is the song that I just talked up for like
And it's on that new CD.
And it's on this new CD called
Peaceful
Waters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go for it.
Okay.
As I sit on this rocky shore, watching my river going by, I can't help but think this river has more, so much more wisdom than I have. It always
eyes and knows what it's supposed to do. But wouldn't it be nice if we could do that too? The river just flows. The river just goes around every bend and over again. Through all the highs and lows, the river just flows. River just knows. No matter how the world turns or where the wind blows, it has its own direction to go. River just flows. I don't know what will happen tomorrow. I don't know what may come today. Just know this time on earth is borrowed. And if the river could speak, what would it say? Maybe find your journey, make your declaration. Carve your own path to your destination. The river just flows. The river just goes around every bend and over again. Through all the highs and lows, the river just flows. River just knows. No matter how the world turns or where the wind blows, it has its own direction to go. The river just flows. River just knows. It's bigger than us, and we just have to trust it'll take us where we're meant to go. The river just flows. Oh, the river just knows. No matter how the world turns or where the wind blows, it has its own direction to go. The river just flows. The river just flows.
Wow, I like that one.
Thank you. We're very, very close to this song. Often, even when we rehearse it, sometimes we step back and talk about what it means to us. And just, yeah, thanks. I'm glad you like it.
Now I've got to listen to it, and I can't listen to this on the way home
because you don't have a CD player.
I do have a CD player.
Well, you do.
But my radio's broken. So nothing worked.
Oh, man. Wait, a radio DJ's radio is broken?
Yeah. How sad is that? I'm running everything off my phone.
Oh,
but,
okay.
No, you know what? I can listen to it because I got my laptop, which is one of the... Oh, no, this laptop doesn't have...
Yeah.
They don't have the... Yeah.
They don't have
is
a CD.
Is it on Spotify?
Well, Sean, you're just
going to
have
Spotify,
to
wait. It is on Spotify,
yes. You got Spotify? We're listening to it on the way home.
Okay, there we go.
See, we figure things out around here.
Yeah. That was a quick solution to the problem.
Right?
No
See,
big deal.
Just got to talk things out.
Yeah.
I like that song. It was thank nice. You. It was nice. Good listening.
Yeah, thank you.
So when's your next one out?
When's our next one out?
What have you done for me lately?
Well, now that I've finished mine, Jerry and I always end up writing. It's always overflowing, and we always have to make albums. Like, I don't know.
We have a lot of songs that we haven't released. And you've heard a few of them, I think, that we've sent to you occasionally.
Yeah, it's like we can't even do another one until
But they're not really... Right now, most of our songs are like... We just a few months ago, we finished a really cool little song. We haven't really rehearsed it much called Don't You Want to Kiss Me.
It's so good.
It's such a fun song. But we have a lot of songs like that that are
mainstream. I'm really humble about it. It's right. So good.
But we haven't done a lot of recording and stuff for various reasons. First of all, she's so darn busy, especially going out with Kelsey again and stuff. So, you know, we don't know. We'll see what happens.
So, August?
Maybe.
Musicians aren't planners.
I mean, for what it's worth.
Well, some are.
I'll say August, but I won't say which August. Which year?
Yeah. Right? You know, it's a lot of work putting a project like that together. Yeah. And so we don't have specific plans, but we do have some song ideas we've been churning around and putting aside, and I don't know where they are anymore. And someday we'll get back together and start churning them out again.
Eventually there'll be another album.
I love writing with this wonderful, wonderful, talented woman. And
me too.
She likes writing with her too.
I like writing with myself too.
But also, she does have this new project coming out that she's got to mix and release and stuff. Yeah. So she's.
I kind of have to let that serious cycle out first, because it is kind of a serious project. And it's not my usual happy-go-lucky stuff, but that will always happen for us.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to it.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I know all about it. I haven't heard it, but I guarantee you that it's going to be awesome.
I think it'll help people who need it.
Good. So the next question.
Yes.
Before we let you go, because apparently everybody's packing up around us again.
Wow, no one wants to hear
this. They do this every year.
Every year. Yeah.
Every year we're the last one standing.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like the last guys at the bar.
We're the last one sitting.
When are you coming to Toronto? Paddle.
Oh, to paddle. I was going to say we were there just last weekend.
When are you coming up?
Actually, yeah, this is a good point. Well, for what it's worth, I've already got permits to go to the Boundary Waters this year in September, and I have some honeydew lists in the summer to do. So probably not this year. I will say this: I really, really do want to go to Mogadore. You know, I know. So
we can take you right to Happen Andy's place.
I know. So. I don't have a specific answer for you.
August.
Yeah, and the answer to all your questions is August.
Actually, the word is soon.
Soon.
And I learned that word. I just came back from India.
We saw.
Yes, and that was a word. If you want something in India, you know, and they say, yes, we'll have some towels for your room soon. And soon could be in 3 minutes or 3 days. It doesn't matter. But they will get there. It's no problem. So, yes. Soon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, whatever it is, whenever it is, we look forward to hearing it.
Same here, buddy.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us. Sean. It's always a pleasure.
Enjoy Canucopia next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do.
Are you going to be there?
No.
Shucks. Okay.
Yeah. I got things to do. I got a record to mix and songs to write and soon.
Just like us.
Soon. Right?
I'll be there soon.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
That was Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson. Always great to end with one of their songs.
Absolutely.
And this was a really good one.
We used to do Jerry's songs a lot for a mid show, mid podcast.
Yeah, we used to just
throw them in. But we haven't done that in a while.
Yeah. We got to get back to doing that.
Yes.
Just pirate his music.
Yes.
I got all his CDs now. Yeah, and you know what? He gave me this one here to listen to.
But he didn't sign it.
And I said, you didn't sign it. We'll have to get you to sign it. He goes, no problems. We'll sign it. And I never did get him to sign it. Mind you, on the front, look at his. Do you think that's their handwriting?
Oh, yeah.
So really, it
basically
is.
Basically, it's self-labeled.
It's self-labeled with their signatures. Mm-hmm. But that's just a cheap way out. They got to really sign it for reals. Jerry Vandiver.com, and then on his site there's a little store tab you can click, and you can buy all his CDs directly from Jerry. And there's a little thing on here saying autograph CD 2, and then you can put somebody's name in there.
Oh.
Like your own.
Yeah.
Or somebody else's.
So they'll personalize it before they mail it out.
I wonder if you can mail it to somebody's address. Maybe I'll get him to sign it to Jerry and then just put his address in.
She's like,
autograph it to Caitlin and have it mailed to Caitlin. What's this, Jerry?
Sean did that.
See if he catches on. Again, really nice chatting with the two of them and hearing them sing. And it's always a hoot having them on. And that was the last of our Quiet Adventure Symposium
2024. Mm-hmm.
Again, another symposium put on, really well done. Yeah, really, really well done. Can't wait till next year.
Yes, and absolutely.
You'll have to be there next year.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. In our brand new booth.
Yeah.
The big old tent thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's it.
That closes it out.
That is it. Done like dinner. You got anything else?
Nothing else.
I will say that it is... When we are recording our little bits here to put between our interviews, it is the spring equinox. Today is the first day of spring.
Oh.
That does not mean it's summer. If you are out paddling, you'd better be wearing a dry suit.
Yes.
The water is still ice cold.
It is.
Don't be foolish. Safety third. I mean, first. Yeah, it is still it's spring. Yes. Hooray. Paddling season is upon us, but don't be in too much of a hurry.
Yeah.
Wear your life jackets. Wear a dry suit right now till the water temperature warms up.
Lakes and rivers are very, very cold.
Yeah. And, I mean, for our area, not so much, but in other areas, that water's moving fast.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If you go over in this water, bye-bye.
Exactly.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Anyway. That's all we've got this week. So if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I still call it Twitter.
X. Whatever.
I was going to call it Z.
I still call it Skydome.
Yeah. X. you can download or stream our episodes. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. We have started putting our podcast up as a video on YouTube. So those who aren't into the podcasting things.
Platforms. Mm-hmm.
Bergy bits.
Yeah.
Then you can just go and click on a YouTube video and listen.
Yeah. Not much video, but there's lots of audio.
Right? Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.